Okay, it is Wednesday morning and we're back. Fantasy baseball today. Time to get a podcast in. This will be the first of two this week. No more one per week. We're stepping up our game as we get closer and closer to the start of the World Baseball Classic and spring training. Adam Azer, Scott White, Heath Cummings, Chris Towers. How about Hunter Renfroe? What a week for Hunter Renfroe, guys.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the Padres outfielder is going to be the second best Hunter Renfroe in 2017, it looks like.
Looks like it. Who stayed up for that Clemson-Alabama game? Everybody?
No.
Anybody?
No. Scott was exhausted.
I did.
I was awake. I just wasn't watching. I turned it on midway through the fourth quarter, saw Clemson have a feeble attempt at a drive, and said, all right, this is stupid. And
Adam, do you know why Scott was exhausted?
Because he has a kid?
He has a new workout program.
Does he really?
Yes, running away from clowns.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, what happened here, Scott? You saw like a crazy clown?
No, crazy might be a stretch.
Do we have time to get in?
We'll get into it later.
Okay.
We'll get into it later.
All right.
Today on the show, Hunter Renfroe, by the way, is the Clemson wide receiver who caught the game-winning touchdown. Today on the show, Keeper Talk. Scott wrote an article with the 50 best keepers for 2017. That's based on last year's draft value, so Mike Trout is not number one. We'll also talk about if you were starting up a keeper league today, who should be the number one pick, based on just no draft value, but, who's got the best career ahead of him or we'll talk about stuff like that. We have some keeper emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And I want to talk about something that probably made Chris and Heath cringe a little bit. Guys who had late surges, finished the year strong last year. What does it mean going into 2017? Does it mean anything? And, of course, Max Scherzer and his stress fracture on his knuckle. First, some tweets. This one comes from Derek Desrusso. Would you guys approve of my pronunciation of D-E-S-R-U-I-S-S-E-A-U-X, Desrusso?
I think the Roos, you're putting too much emphasis on the U.
Desrousseau?
Desrousseau.
Desrousseau, do you even pronounce the first S?
Desroussex.
Ah, thank you, Chris. Thank you for clarifying. Okay, 12-team Roto League, 7 keepers. Edwin Encarnacion or Gary Sanchez in a keeper league? Who are you keeping?
Well, okay. Keep forever. That's an important point he mentioned in here. I think when it's as many as 7 keepers, that's kind of a middle amount of roster turnover from year to year. I think in that instance, I would opt for the younger player who I'm going to keep a long time, and that's Gary Sanchez, of course. If it was like 4 keepers, that little roster turnover, I mean, Edwin Encarnacion is going to get drafted 4 rounds ahead of Gary Sanchez and just single season format, so he's clearly the player I'm looking at to help more immediately.
Chris, Heath, who do you prefer in a keeper league?
It really depends. If it's a keeper league that only lasts a year or two, I think you probably prefer Encarnacion. But once you start getting past that stage, you hit the point where Encarnacion could fall off a cliff any year. So it has to be Sanchez.
Okay. Okay, then. Next email. Sienna Ziggs. No pronunciation problems there. Adam, any chance we could get a debate over Alex Reyes and Jameson Taillon for next season on the podcast? Who's it going to be, Heath, Alex Reyes or Jameson Taillon?
It's close, but I'm going to say it's Jameson Taillon.
Would you like to back it up?
No.
All right, great.
That's who it is, Adam. Heath has spoken.
Anybody want to vote for Alex Reyes?
I was having to consult my rankings because it's close enough. I have Taillon 45th and Reyes 53rd. I would say it's probably because I'm more confident Taillon will have a job from the very beginning.
Okay. Chris?
Reyes certainly has more upside, right? Like he's definitely the higher variance play. I feel like Taillon's pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably go Taillon as well, but it's pretty close.
Tyone it is. A clean sweep. Fellas, Max Scherzer has a stress fracture on the knuckle of his right finger. He pitched with it at the end of last season, did fine. And Scherzer has pitched the most innings in baseball over the last five seasons. He will not be pitching in the World Baseball Classic. Expects to be ready for spring training.
This fractured knuckle saved us. It saved us the worry of Scherzer in the WBC.
Well, that's not a bad point, but I hate when 3 months into the off season or whatever it is, now they discover he has a stress fracture in his finger. Like, why couldn't they have discovered that in October?
There's still plenty of time.
So no concerns, not downgrading him at all.
No, not at all. This sounds like a very minor injury, especially given that he was pitching through it before.
All right, here's the rest of the news and notes. Then we can get into the fun stuff. You tell me the big fantasy impact here. Heath gets to go crazy over Jerod Dyson. Tampa Bay signed Colby Rasmus. Baltimore acquired Seth Smith from Seattle. They gave up Yovani Gallardo. Seattle then traded Nate Karns to Kansas City and got Jerod Dyson back. And Oakland today agreed to a deal with third baseman Trevor Plouffe. Okay. Who's the big winner here, guys?
I was trying to figure this out, like, if I liked these trades for anybody. And I don't know that I necessarily do. I think Seth Smith's most likely at some point, again, going to end up in a platoon.
I mean, it's a very nice park shift for Seth Smith.
Right,
though.
That's true.
Baltimore is a great place to hit. I like it for Seattle pitchers. Like,
yeah.
Seattle's outfield defense is going to be fantastic. Their defense, actually, across the board,
well, that's
should be plus pretty much everywhere except maybe first base.
Yeah, I was going to go the Seattle outfield angle, too, because, I mean, he wasn't directly involved in any of these trades, but the fact that through two trades, the Mariners swapped out Seth Smith, who's more of a bat-first guy, for Jerod Dyson, more of a defensive-first guy. In conjunction with that, DePoto, the Mariners' GM, confirmed that the plan is for Mitch Haniger to start in right field. And you may remember that was a guy I was very excited about at the end of last year. The huge season he had in the minors, a 999 OPS between two levels, from a guy who was considered a good prospect at the very start of his professional career and then kind of fell off. I think he's a definite sleeper going into this season. Yep. With the playing time he's going to get. Somebody who I think could hit for average and power with pretty good plate discipline and would be an everyday player. So he's now somebody I'm looking at in the late rounds of even mixed league drafts.
All right, that's Mitch Haniger you're talking about?
Yep.
What about Jerod Dyson? Jerod Dyson has stolen, let's see, between 26 and 36 bases five straight seasons. He's never done that as a full-time player, so you know he's got potential for a lot more. He's terrible against lefties, though. Is Dyson, Heath, in a position now where he can be a 40-plus steals guy?
Well, we thought that going into last year, and it didn't come to fruition. I think that there's a decent chance that he can do that, especially if the projections of some places that show Dyson as the leadoff hitter happen to be true, and he's going to get that extra little bit of plate appearance magic that I know you love.
Oh, I love it.
He definitely needs to be drafted in roto leagues.
Yes.
Yeah. Right now, I don't see, like, I'm not confident Dyson's going to play every day because every time we thought he might before, he didn't.
Right.
But I don't see anyone he's going to sit for, even against left-handers. They have Danny Valencia, who's going to be somebody who starts against every left-hander, I assume. But I imagine Dan Vogelbach at first base would be the man he's replacing, especially since they're prioritizing outfield defense.
Nate Karns goes to Kansas City, and they've done well with some reclamation projects. He's 29 years old, had a 5.15 ERA, and that was last year, but in 2015 had a 367 ERA, a 1.28 whip, which isn't great, but a strikeout per inning. He does walk a lot of batters. And in that 2015 season, Karns, while he wasn't bad, you know, if you just look at the numbers, he only had three starts of more than six innings, and that was in 147 innings. So,
he was with the Rays that year.
That was the Rays, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sorry. But now he's going to the Royals. Is anybody excited about Nate Karns as a deep sleeper?
The problem is that usually when a pitcher goes to the Royals, you're thinking, well, they're getting an upgrade in park, they're getting an upgrade in defense, and Carnes has done nothing in his career but pitch in good parks in front of good defenses.
So, no, this does not move the needle for you.
He'll be someone that you stream at various points. He's not relief pitcher eligible, though. So, it's a little hard to get excited about him.
Well, let's get excited about these six players who finished 2016 strong.
Bah, 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 bah.
There's one that matters.
There's one that matters. All right, so I'm going to read the six.
Now it's a guessing game. Heath turned it into a guessing game.
The one that matters, he probably is the one who struck out like three times a game. All right, here are the six that I went to FanGraphs because now I do that, and I sorted by WOBA because now I do that, or WABA if you want to be an idiot about it, weighted on base average. In the last 30 days, I think. And then I went back and I looked how extended it was. And these were guys, not the only six players, but six players who excelled down the stretch. Justin Upton, Adrian Beltre. We'll get into the specific numbers later. Curtis Granderson, Hanley Ramirez, Kendrys Morales, who's now on the Blue Jays, and Byron Buxton, who I'm guessing Heath is the only one that matters, Byron Buxton.
Well, I thought it's not much of a guessing game if I just give you the answer.
Well, that's my guess.
Oh, that's your guess? Yes, that's correct.
Yeah,
I don't care about the last month or 2 months of a season for guys that have been in the league for 10 years.
Well, I'm using this as an excuse to talk about them. Let's put it that way, okay?
Okay, so, that's fair.
Yeah, so...
Then I'm really excited, and I think we all are, about Kendrys Morales going to Toronto and hitting in the middle of the order. I would expect...
That's not a very good order anymore.
Well, it's a better order than he was in last year, and it's a much better park.
It's a better park, yeah.
It's the first hitter's park he's been in his entire career. He's always been in pitcher-friendly parks. And what I noticed about Morales is what he did during... It was really the last 4 months of the season. The first 2 months for him were so awful. And then the last 4 months, he was a stud, basically. He put up numbers like he... put up way back in his Angels days, probably so long ago that nobody even remembers
but,
it.
But can I disagree with that just a little
bit?
Yeah,
he had a 662 OPS in July.
I think, Scott, that when you look at the last 4 months, there was a stretch for Morales, and there was some interleague play in there, if you recall. They stuck him in the outfield. He got outfield eligible, and he had a 15-game stretch, Morales, in late June to early July. He hit .509 with 8 home runs and 22 RBIs. He's the hottest hitter in baseball. And that kind of carried him in June and July. But I really thought it was just the last 2 months or last 33 games I have that were actually good.
He had a big June, he had a big August, and a big September.
But I even think
okay,
that big
whatever.
June was
like,
that.
I don't know why are we supposed to discount those 2 weeks? I mean, he...
Because
well,
it wasn't
numbers,
two
numbers
sustained... It wasn't four sustained months of being good. It was two good months at the end, and those other 2 months in the middle were really just one big
hot
streak.
I understand,
but
if a guy has a good season... But one of those months were bad. We don't say he didn't have a good season because one of the months was bad. He still had a good season. He had a good, his last 4 months total stats were good. And I don't really even care so much about that. What I look at is since he came to Kansas City, he's been productive. Now he's going to a much better park and the Blue Jays offense won't be near as good as it was last year. It's still going to be better than what he had around him in Kansas City.
Well, what I was getting to.
Yeah.
was his BABIP during those last 4 months. Even though he hit around 290 like he used to as an Angel, like he did in 2015 as a Royal, was perfectly sustainable. The home run rate was up, but it was up to where it was during those days with the Angels, something we've seen from him before after, he had kind of this resurgence in 2015 from the Royals. It seems like he's built himself up back to the player he was before that awful leg injury that completely sidetracked him. And now he's going to the most favorable environment he's ever been with an organization that has a history of maximizing power hitters and not just reclamation projects like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. I mean, look what it did for Josh Donaldson going from a pitcher's park to a hitter's park. I think I'm expecting at least 30 home runs for Morales this year and probably with a good batting average.
There's something to be said for never getting fooled by an off-speed pitch and always having the wind at your back.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Those were both rumors about things they were doing in Toronto over the last 5 years.
All right. Conspiracy theorist heath here.
What? The man in white
fun.
Is certainly
no,
help.
The guy with the white thing yeah. telling
What's
him what pitch
second
is coming?
Part?
That they turn the air conditioner shirt. On when the Blue Jays are batting so that there's a jet stream.
Man.
I didn't make it up. It's fun.
Royals Twitter is.
That did not come from Royals Twitter at all.
Well, okay, so that's Kendrys Morales, who will be 34 years old in June.
That's the thing that has me skeptical about him suddenly rediscovering the power stroke that he had when he was 27, 28, and 29. I would say 30 home runs is certainly a possibility. He did it last year, obviously, so that's not really saying much. Expecting 30 home runs, I think, is a bit much from a soon-to-be 34-year-old who had a major spike in home run to fly ball ratio. I would probably expect something in the 20 to 25 range.
Well, that's why it was saying much, because it would be a lot to ask, but I'm asking it anyway.
All right, bold Scott White. What is Morales' eligibility?
DH.
Yeah.
DH only.
Mm-hmm.
So
but you don't have to worry about drafting David Ortiz and clogging it up anymore.
All right, so when would you be comfortable taking this DH-only Kendrys Morales?
By the way, that was the second time in the podcast history that we've had a Kendrys Morales-David Ortiz conversation. It did not go well for me. I think I have him right around the 9th round, 10th round.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a lot earlier than I have him.
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason I love him is because I feel like you can get him in round 15, but apparently not if you're drafting with Heath.
That's around.
Well, I'm not going to draft him there.
I have him
right around,
I have him
right
around
round
15, yeah.
All right. Look, I can make a case that all these guys matter in some respect. Like, let's take Justin Upton, right? Yes, he has been in the league a while, and we kind of know, we thought we knew what he was, but last year was a really bad year for Upton. He's 29 years old now. He was the number 32 outfielder in points leagues, number 23 in Roto. A lot better in Roto because the strikeouts don't hurt him in that format. Last 37 games, Justin Upton hit .303. With a .395 on base and a .765 slugging percentage. Upton hit 18 home runs in those 37 games with 19 walks, 37 strikeouts, which is a very respectable ratio there. I don't know. Look, could it be that he just caved under the big contract demands? Could it be that he could be back to the streaky hitter that Upton always had been, but one who's going to finish closer to the top 15 rather than 30th, you know, and we can just say that the first few months of last season were, you know, some of the worst of his career, and he'll be better. Does it make sense what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying he's going to be a consistent hitter because he's not going to be, but is there going to actually be value with Justin Upton in the draft because he's better than what the final season numbers might indicate?
Well, no, I mean, the final season numbers are basically the same every year. And
yeah,
they're
in
good.
The end, he's been the same guy since 2013.
No, because the batting average isn't as good as it used to be. Oh. He's like a .260 hitter now, and he doesn't steal bases now.
I mean, that's been going on for 3 or 4 years, though.
Batting average.
I think
he hit .263, .270, .251, .246. Yeah, that's reasonable range of expectations.
Right. That's not a different player.
He hit .246 last year. That's what really stands out.
That's 19 points lower than it was in 2013.
But it keeps going down.
Well, his BABIP, like, I don't think that's really that surprising necessarily. He was a lot faster 5 years ago. He profiled maybe as a hitter that have a little bit better BABIP.
I feel like I'm talking.
I think it's just a matter of how early he gets hot. And last year it was September. He was on the waiver wire in August in a lot of leagues, and
He could hit .270 next year while being the same guy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's... I think there's about a 60-point range of batting average for any player, actually. So 20 points...
Yeah.
Less than that. It's more like... Well, I guess it's 25. But anyway. No, I... Last year, the fact that he was on waivers in August is kind of really sums it up with Justin Upton for me. Is the production, the ending production is going to be fine, but the winding path he takes there, unless he's hot in April, which a couple years recently he has been, his best month has been April. it's hard to have the discipline to stick with him, certainly in head-to-head leagues where you're racking up losses in the meantime. And even in Roto, I mean, you never know. You could never be completely sure this isn't the year he just falls off, particularly as much as he strikes out. Doesn't look like a player profile that's going to age well. So it's, I think even though his production may end up being like a number two outfielder, I wouldn't target him as more than a number three just because of the headache he's going to cause.
I'm looking at the consensus rankings on Fantasy Pros. And Justin Upton, CBS, ESPN, Yahoo, consensus rankings, is the number 19 outfielder, which shocked me.
Too high.
Of Cespedes, ahead of Schwarber, Adam Jones, Will Myers, Matt Kemp, Chris Davis with a K, Jackie Bradley, David Dahl. Where do you guys have Justin Upton?
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. That's projecting him based on his ending line, which I'm sure makes sense unless you've been through the Justin Upton experience yourself.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I just 33rd
I thought I don't value him that much.
You have him where, Chris?
33rd at outfield in Roto.
You guys all have him around in the 30s.
I might have him a little lower actually, but
I
not
think
not
I'm
far.
Higher than that.
Where do you have him?
Oh, well, I'd love to be able to tell you. Scott,
he doesn't have his computer.
I do not have that ability right now.
I have him 31st. I am higher than I think.
Okay, so I'll see Heath. You have him 23rd.
There you go.
Jackie Bradley.
Perfect.
Okay. Now, Heath is going to be leaving the podcast a little earlier today. So, Heath, let's talk about, quote, the only one that matters, end quote. I think that's a quote. Byron Buxton, he hit .277 with 7 home runs in September after being recalled, but he had 8 walks, 35 strikeouts, and 1 steal. So, what do you think about Mr. Buxton?
Well, the reason I say it's the only one that matters, because if he had not come up and hit in September, there's no chance I'd be drafting him this year.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like he was just a bust, and he was going to have to show something, and he'd be somebody on your scout team that you'd pick up on waivers. I do think with a player that young, with that little experience, he comes up 1 month means more than it does with a 30-year-old.
Yeah, I don't know how much this month means, though.
I understand that. It at least makes him worth a late-round flyer. I'm not going out and trying to obtain Byron Buxton, but if he falls to me, I'll take him.
I'm getting more excited about him, and obviously striking out every third at-bat is not something I get excited about. It's
not
reason why...
bases.
It's reason why he could still be a bust. But he was... Every opportunity he had gotten in the majors before, he was incompetent. And that last month, I mean, he had like an 1100 OPS. He was the best hitter on the Twins. So whatever was affecting him earlier, it's like it was all clear all of a sudden. Like the blinders were lifted.
Except he struck out 38 times, 113 plays.
He may not be that good still, but we'll at least get a chance to see how good he can be because he doesn't have that mental block anymore.
Do you draft Byron Buxton in a 3 outfielder league?
No.
Probably not.
Yeah, he's at the very edge of like a reserve guy.
Do you draft in a 5 outfielder league Byron Buxton or Jock Peterson?
I actually have them 3 spots apart in my rankings, and I think I'm the highest on Jock Peterson by far.
Mm-hmm.
I need to move Jock Peterson above Byron Buxton. I think there's a lot of reasons to trust him more.
I think Peterson, we know what he's going to deliver. The problem is the playing time makes him a non-starter for me, so I'll take Buxton.
Okay. Heath, would you rather have Byron Buxton or Carlos Beltran?
Boy.
Like, it's got to be Beltran, right? He's earned that.
Yeah, I mean, I expect, like, if there's anybody that's going to fall off the face of the earth, it's probably going to be Carlos Beltran this year. He's like 112 years old.
He's not that old.
He's not?
He's old.
He's like 39.
He's exceptionally old.
He's old.
He's one of the oldest players relevant in fantasy.
How many guys just completely fall off a cliff, though? Happened with A-Rod, for sure.
Every single one at some point.
Except David Ortiz.
Well, and like, it's not like Carlos Beltran is a top 20 outfielder, so he would have to fall off the edge of the earth to not be relevant anymore.
Right.
He didn't finish as a top 20 outfielder?
I feel like he probably did. He had a really good year last year.
Yeah, he did.
In points?
Maybe not in points.
He was right behind Bryce Harper in outfield in Roto, which is probably like 16th or so. And I can check in. All right. Well, so who are you taking, Heath? Beltran or who do we say? Buxton.
I do not have access to my rankings right now. I'm going to say Buxton, but they're in the same range.
Okay.
I'm probably not drafting Beltran in a three outfielder league.
Beltran was around 20th in points, but I don't think he was in the top 20. Next up on the list, I'm going to go to Adrian Beltre. Adrian Beltre last season finished as the number 6 third baseman in fantasy. He will be 38 years old in April. He hit 300 with 32 home runs. In the last 2 months, he hit 16 of those 32 home runs with a 340 average. First 4 months for Beltre wasn't terrible. 279, 16 home runs, and 65 RBIs. So he was basically on pace for 279, 24 homers, and 98 RBIs with 26 doubles. A pretty bad power year in those first 4 months. Turned it on with those 16 homers and a 340 average in the last 2 months of the season for Beltre. So that's pretty good. Stays healthy now somehow. And yeah, I mean, I guess the question is the power. Cause Beltre had failed to hit 20 home runs in 2014 and 15. He was on pace for 24 home runs through 4 months and then he went nuts. So what do you guys make of it with Adrian Beltre?
I think the first 4 months are a much better indication of the type of player he is at this point in his career.
Agreed.
Like, I would expect something like 20 to 25 home runs, 280 to 300 batting average.
The first 4 months agree much more with his last three seasons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you take Michael Franco or Adrian Beltre?
Beltre. Easily.
Yeah.
Would you take Evan Longoria or Adrian Beltre?
Beltre.
Barely.
How concerned are you about Beltre this year falling off the Carlos Beltran cliff?
I was more concerned last year because of the way he was trending, and now he's kind of reversed the trend. I do think the last 2 months were too good to be true, and I would still be a little nervous about taking him. But not based on the comparisons you were giving just then, but the one I frequently uses Alex Bregman versus Beltre.
Yeah.
Bregman mostly unproven, but we think he has a lot of upside. I would rather take Bregman.
I mean, you look at Beltre and Longoria, they kind of both have the same trend line. Mm-hmm. Both were trending down over the last couple of years. Both had big bounce back power seasons.
But Beltre has a much better safety net, I feel like, because he's so much better peripherally.
Yeah. Never strikes out, plays in a good offense. True. That should be a really good offense.
A couple more here. We got Heath. I'll let you choose. Would you like to talk about Curtis Granderson and his last 30 games?
No.
Or Hanley Ramirez and his? Did I just hear a no from Chris?
It was from Heath.
Chris is not going to let me choose. We're going Hanley.
All right, Hanley Ramirez. Final 2 months of the season for Hanley. He batted .306 with 17 home runs, 22 walks, 39 strikeouts, 9 doubles in his first 4 months. Kind of like Beltre, not that bad, but not amazing. 275. Actually, his number is very similar. How about this? Adrian Beltre, first 4 months, 279. Hanley, first 4 months, 275. Beltre, 16 homers. Hanley, 13 homers. Beltre, 65 RBIs. Hanley, 61 RBIs. Walk to strikeout a little bit different, but obviously Hanley with those 7 steals in the first 4 months. So he's got more speed. But yeah, no, there are some similarities in the numbers. And then a big finish for Hanley Ramirez. That made him, I believe, a top 10 first baseman last year. Hanley finished, 10th in points and 9th in Roto. 33 years old. Okay, Heath, what do you think about that big finish from Hanley?
Like, he's not as old as Adrian Beltre, but with his history, I do feel like he's
33. Hanley's older than we think.
Yeah, he's 4 years younger, though, than Beltre. Yeah. I do think with his history, I have just about as many concerns about Hanley as I do Beltre.
Yeah.
And Chris brought up a good point when we were talking about Mookie Betts yesterday, and it doesn't matter as much with Mookie because he was so good.
Yeah, Mookie Betts' floor is like number 4.
But Hanley was helped a lot by how good that offense was with David Ortiz in the middle of it, and he's not going to be there. He's going to have less RBIs this year, I almost guarantee it.
Yeah, I would bet a lot of money on Hanley going under his runs and RBI totals from last year. He also had the most plate appearances he's had since 2012.
I'd bet a lot of money on going under that as well.
No, well, yeah. That's the thing. I don't know, because he finally stopped playing the outfield.
Sure.
And they put him at a position that made him less likely to get injured. He didn't get injured, and now he's going to play some DH this year.
If he plays 147 games, I would still expect him. That's what he played last year. I would still expect him to have at least some kind of reduction in plate appearances. That offense isn't going to be as good as it was last year. I don't think that's a particularly hot take.
I don't think it's going to be as good, but I still think it should be.
It should be very good. It should be one of the best offenses in baseball. But they had a half run per. I think they scored 100 more runs than the number two offense in the AL last year. That's not going to happen.
Big gap, yeah.
Like, they can come back to earth and still be one of the best offenses, but that you're going to see a reduction in the count in the raw counting stats for everyone across the board in that offense.
All right. So looking at first base rankings here, would you rather have Hanley Ramirez or Jose Abreu?
Abreu.
Abreu.
I've got Abreu higher.
Would you rather
I don't
have
really
Hanley
like Abreu.
Hanley Ramirez or Carlos Santana in a points league?
Santana.
Yeah.
With that stipulation in a points league, I'll say Santana.
And in a roto league?
Well, I would take Hanley there because Santana is such a clear liability in batting average, and that's a hard category to make up for late.
Was Santana worse last year in roto?
Than Hanley? I would assume so. I don't have the numbers right in front of me.
Adam does.
But it's also worth noting that Santana's 2016 is probably peak production from him, too, because it was a jump from like 19 home runs the year before to 30.
Hanley Ramirez was the number 9 hitter in Roto, number 9 first baseman in Roto. Santana was number 10, 11, 12, and he was 25 spots behind Hanley in the overall Roto rankings. So
I have Hanley ahead. I would probably expect Carlos Santana's 2017 to look more like his 2016 than Hanley's.
Hey, quick programming announcement, everybody. Tomorrow, or whenever we do our next show, whether it's tomorrow or Friday, it will be a mailbag show. Let's hear from you. We got some interesting questions coming in. Somebody said, what do you expect from Tyson Ross this season? And I said, you know what? This inspires me to do a mailbag. So we'll do a mailbag. Send us your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. But this is not a keeper question mailbag. I'll do some keeper questions, but I want to know about, you know, I want questions about this year and you know, position scarcity or player outlooks, whatever it is. But not, hey,
questions.
I have 12 keepers. Help me pick 11 of them. For the mailbag, fantasy baseball.
It's gonna be all keeper.
It's gonna be all keeper questions.
Well, I mean, we're gonna get plenty of them, but I'll pick and choose, obviously. So, so do that. And last guy on the late season standouts list is Curtis Granderson. In his last 30 games, he hit .317 with 10 home runs, 24 RBIs, and 22 walks to 19 strikeouts. And that I think is the most interesting thing here because he's been a good on base guy in his first 119 games. Granderson was terrible. He hit .219. He did hit 20 home runs, but .219, 51 walks, and 110 strikeouts. But you know, with all those walks, and at the end of the year came 29 runs in 30 games. I don't know. What do you guys think about Granderson? He only led off for about half the year last year, because he was so bad they had to take him out of that spot. But you know, never been a guy that I've really liked that much, or at least not recently. Yeah. How about you on Hanley?
On Granderson?
Yeah, Granderson. Grandy.
He's pretty boring, right? I mean, like, I feel like his purpose in fantasy is if you don't have a great third outfield option in a points league, you could put Granderson there and he won't kill you. Like, in terms of what he did the final 2 months, sounds like a lot of regression to me.
Like, he did kill you for a long portion of the season, though.
No, he didn't kill you. I mean, he
killed you.
He was kind of hot and cold. It was dependent on when he homered, when his good weeks were.
He was mostly unstartable.
No, he was usable.
I would expect him. I have him right next to Jock Peterson and Byron Buxton in my rankings. I would expect him to produce in the same range as those guys, like just the most likely outcome for everybody involved. But you'd rather draft Peterson or Buxton.
Yeah,
for sure.
I would rather draft anyone with upside. I don't like standard 12 team three outfielder league. I don't like. There's you couldn't make me draft Granderson because.
Oh, I could.
No, you couldn't.
I could go to your desk and click the button.
That's not an efficient use of a late round pick.
I could just distract.
In a five outfielder league, you could draft him.
Sure.
There's a lot more outfield spots to fill.
Yeah. Heath.
Yeah.
Do we have to say goodbye to you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the podcast, enjoyed the pre-podcast. Make sure Scott tells you the story about the clown, because it's the best story I've ever heard in my employment at CBS Sports.
Good grief.
Like, no question.
That is no some question. Serious buildup.
Yeah.
And now you're not even here to react to it. So,
if you have a laugh track of someone like laughing so hard they're almost wetting their pants, that's how I reacted to it.
Really?
Yes, it's outstanding.
Okay. All right, well, let's do it. Well, Heath, thank you for your time.
Yep.
All right, Scott. All right.
So you want to hear about this clown?
I do, but also we're going to get into keepers now. And okay. Scott's column about the top 50 keepers for 2017. We also have your emails to read at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, including some keeper questions here that are pretty interesting and relevant for this conversation. But what the hell happened with Bozo the Clown?
Bozo the Clown. So, okay, I'm in my apartment on a Sunday, I guess it was, and I'm going out to my car to get something, right? In between the apartment and the car is a single tree. And behind that solitary tree is a clown. And not just a clown, but a clown that looks like it's kind of hiding out there, like it's peeking around the corner. And the closer I look at this clown, because obviously, you know, I'm stop and look at it. It's a clown behind a tree. It has bloodstained teeth.
Oh my God.
And is holding a knife. So immediately, you know, I kind of stagger back a couple steps. This is an intimidating sight. And then the clown takes a couple steps toward me. Also says, wait, it's okay. I think I recognized in the moment it was a woman dressed up as a clown. So, you know, wait, it's okay. But, you know, what else is a psycho going to say, right? So the fact that it's moving toward me with a weapon in hand and, you know, dressed up to look menacing, I just take off.
Definitely a real knife. Like, you could tell from where you were.
I don't know. I didn't expect it that closely. They can make some fake looking knives look pretty real, but it looked real. It was a knife. It was, yeah. Okay. So I just run away.
Yeah.
despite her pleas that it's okay, I run and I lose a flip flop in the process.
Oh no.
I don't even think I was aware of that. I get back to the apartment and I'm trying to explain what I saw to my wife. You know, there's a scary looking clown outside, but you know, I'm kind of like shaking, like I'm scared. Like, I at least had the presence of mind, because I remember telling her it could be a prank. Like, in the moment, I thought, okay, this could be a neighbor. I could be completely overreacting here, or I could drown in a pool of my own blood. So, you know, it didn't seem like something you mess around with. So as I'm explaining it to my wife, the blinds are open in our apartment. I see the clown walk away from the tree and in the direction I ran. So, you know, my heart is racing even faster once I'm inside here, because it seems like it's following us. So, I don't know. My wife kind of wanders away while I'm still trying to explain it to her. There's a knock at the door. I guess she looks through the peephole, recognizes the person, because it turns out it's my neighbor. My neighbor from the apartment upstairs, she was joined by her roommate, who wasn't dressed up as a clown. They explained the whole situation. That's when I realized I had lost my flip-flop, because they had it in hand.
We brought your flip-flop back.
Apparently it was some kind of audition, or I don't know, they were taking pictures for something. I don't really understand the situation completely. But it was nothing nefarious. It wasn't even, you know, there's the story about the scary clowns dressing up around the country and intimidating people. It doesn't seem like it was anything like that, but it was a hair-raising moment for sure. I, Like, the thing that gets me after the fact, because obviously I'm embarrassed that, you know, I reacted with such fright.
And I would have called the cops.
Okay. I mean, what would have been the appropriate response to that? Is there anything else you could have done in that situation? I don't think that's a situation where you're like, you know what? I'm going to wait and see where this goes.
No, I agree with you.
Like, the only choice was to run. And yeah, if there was enough time to get the complete explanation out to my wife, calling the cops probably would have been the next step.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to that point. It was, I could count on one hand the moments of my life where I thought, you know what, this could be the end. This could be the end of my life right here. And this was one of them.
Yeah. You know, only two things could make this better. One, if you were on video and this went onto YouTube and became viral.
Yeah.
That would be great. Two, I'm picturing you run back into your house at your apartment and you're telling your wife, and she's like in the other room, like folding laundry, and you can't see her, and you're telling her what's happening. And then you're like, yeah, there's this crazy clown and she's got blood on her teeth and a knife in her hand or whatever. And your wife comes out from the other room and is dressed like a clown with a knife in her hand. And now everybody's against you. Like, that would have been great. With like
that would have been an awesome prank. Yes. Yeah. That would have been more deliberate. I will mention the neighbors seemed, you know, genuinely apologetic. Like, they weren't trying to get somebody to panic to the level I did.
They don't want you to be concerned about the murderous clown. They're trying to have the clown sneak up on you next time. Now you're on a high alert. Every time you hear the wind rustle through the leaves, you're going to think there's a clown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went out to get that thing from the car later, and they were still upstairs laughing about it. I heard them. That's always a good feeling.
I'm glad you shared that with us. You know, I'm a little embarrassed by this, but I did something horrible to my neighbor. Not on purpose. But, you know, I was away all week. As you know, I was in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So I had my future father-in-law checking on the house. And, you know, feeding the cat while we were gone. And yeah, he took in the recycling bin. He took in our neighbor's recycling bin, thought it was ours. And we got home, opened the garage, and we stole her recycling bin. So, so there's that. So Scott, crazy things are happening all over the place, but we gave it back. That's the good news.
Apartment living, baby.
Yeah. All right. So. Keepers, that's what we were talking about. Oh yeah, uh-huh. Keepers. I'm gonna read a couple emails real quick here. This is from Mike in Charlotte. He says, "Dear Alex, Luke, and Harrison."
Alex, Luke, and Harrison. Okay, that's
Star Wars characters.
Is it
sort of Luke Skywalker, Harrison Ford? That's actor versus character.
Yeah, no, that's not what it is.
Okay. This seems so obvious, and I can't.
Oh, you know who it is.
Who?
I think it's Alex Reyes, Luke Weaver, and Harrison Barnes, Cardinals prospects.
Okay. After playing in redraft
Harrison
leagues for
Barnes,
5 years, I'm finally entering my first keeper league. How do you approach a new keeper league draft differently than a redraft league? Are there any players you'd target specifically, and what round would you look for them at? And we're setting our keeper rules up, and three keepers has been proposed, but I would like more. How many do you prefer? So let's set up a keeper league for Mike and Charlotte.
Harrison Bader is the Cardinals prospect.
I like three keepers. When you're first drafting in a keeper league, it obviously depends on how many keepers you're going to have. If it's a relatively small pool over the course of the years, I don't think it changes your strategy much at all.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, too small a number of keepers.
But I like it. Like, I like a smaller number of keepers. Maybe in baseball, because the rosters are so big, you can up it to five or six. But I like having that roster churn every year. I don't like a situation where if a team gets into a bad spot, they might be screwed for the next 3 or 4 years. So I think, you know, you're talking about the difference between a keeper and a dynasty league, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that distinction. I prefer dynasty leagues to keeper leagues. But I would... Like, the thrill of drafting is such a big part of all fantasy sports.
Yeah.
That if that was my only league, I would want to minimize the number of keepers so I can enjoy that drafting. Now, the position I'm in, I draft so many times. Like, that's not that I get my drafting fix. So my dynasty leagues where, you know, you keep 10 players or more, they end up being my favorite leagues. But I would really miss the drafting if I didn't have it as a regular part of baseball season.
Yeah. And I think you should attach draft pick compensation to your keepers, not just keep any three you want.
Well, if it's only three, I don't know that I really care about that. If it's more of a dynasty league setup, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I did a keeper league last year. It was the first keeper league I've ever done in fantasy baseball. No, I think we were keeping three or four, and we had an interesting setup where you had to keep, you could not keep two players from the same tier, and the tiers were divided by five rounds. So rounds one through five were your first was tier one players, round six through 10, tier two. Round 11 through 15, tier 3, et cetera. And I haven't done the keepers yet, but I can keep three, I believe, and they have to be from different tiers, which is kind of a cool twist on it.
I will say one thing that I think is easy to make a mistake with in keeper leagues when you're starting is overrating potential down the road. Most players aren't going to live up to their best case scenario, but it's really easy to talk yourself into young guys, prospects, etc., living up to their potential.
Right.
And
so you're taking Trey Turner in the second round in a redraft league. Where are you guys taking Trey Turner in a keeper league?
Oh, first round, I would think is because I mean, at that point I'm taking him ahead of Miguel Cabrera,
Votto.
Yeah, Votto. But those are still second rounders. Who are the You know what? Now that I think about it,
yeah, maybe not.
We're kind of at a stage with talent turnover where the highest end players in the game are all in their mid 20s or early 20s. Yeah. So, he might not quite crack the first round even there. Now, if it's a situation like I designed my top 50 keepers article around where they already have an established value from last year's draft and you're keeping them relative to that. I mean, Turner is probably the most valuable player in your league because if he was drafted at all, it was late. So he's a very cheap keeper with first round upside. That's why he's my number one pick in that article. But just if it's just all players equal value from the get go, he might be just outside the top 12 still because only half a season of data we're working with.
And for me, I look at like comparing an older first baseman like Miguel Cabrera or Joey Votto. I'm still taking them over. Is Will Myers the best of the kind of young-ish first baseman? There's not really a lot out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that.
But that's kind of the way I'm looking at it is I'm still valuing present day over the long-term outlook. I'm still taking Robinson Cano over Rougned Odor.
It just kind of depends on the way your league's set up, though. And my favorite Dynasty League setup is one that kind of emulates the way real-life salaries work, where players, when they first break in, are very, like, so cheap they're practically free for the first few years. And that's why prospects carry so much value in real life. And that's why they can in fantasy if you design your league that way. But if their value is going to, as soon as they get good, their value is going to escalate, then I would agree with what you're saying there.
In a keeper league, first year keeper league, do you think you're taking Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto first or George Springer? Would you consider taking a George Springer before those guys?
Probably Springer. I think that one's close enough.
Mm-hmm. It would depend how many keepers are. If we're talking three or four, I don't even really worry about youth if it's that few. But if it's seven or eight,
But I only have Springer six or seven spots behind those guys anyway.
No, I understand.
Okay. All right, next question's from Mitch. And I think we pretty much answered it, but let's give a quick answer just to sum up our thoughts. He says, hey, Gordon, Charlie, Hans, and Goldberg. Easy one, guys.
That sounds like the Mighty Ducks.
It is the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
All right. He just wants to know if you were to participate in only one league and it were a 12-team auction league, how would you like to see the keepers managed?
Now, auction, I think, is the more fun way to do keepers. Because you can start doing things like, you know, the salary escalates more with how many keepers you have. So I think that one, the keeper league I have for baseball, we have 3-year contracts. You can keep up to 10 players per year. Your first one, your most expensive player gets no inflation on their cost. Everyone else gets more inflation as you rack up more keepers.
Okay. Scott, 12-team auction league. I need some keeper guidelines. Give me the quick do's and don'ts.
Yeah, I think particularly if you're doing an auction league, like Chris was saying, I'd rather the keeper cost be tied to the amount you paid for him.
Oh, yeah, it has to be.
If you're still talking only five, you don't go full dynasty there. I think you keep it simple. Like maybe you pay $3 more for him the next year or $5 more for him the next year, whatever number you think it makes sense. But you're rewarded for seizing value.
Yep.
Do you like a limit on the amount of years you can keep someone?
Yes.
I don't know. It would probably depend how that escalation works, because that could become kind of a natural limit if the escalation is...
Yeah, but if you got Mike Trout for $1 his rookie season, there's no escalation that can make that reasonable, and it's probably still... Like, that can really screw up the competitive balance of a league for a long time. Mm.
I don't know that the Trout owner shouldn't be rewarded to the extent the Angels are for getting Trout, though.
Well, like, yeah, but Trout is being paid $25 million a year now.
Now he is, but he didn't have to be. That's because the Angels wanted to lock him up for longer.
No, he would be in his sixth year. He would be getting his final arbitration with two MVPs and three MVP runner-ups. He would be...
So if you got Trout for $1, which is a hypothetical that's probably unrealistic anyway... And it was escalating $5 every year. Now he would be a $26 keeper, which is still good, but I don't know that it's good it ruins the competitive balance of the league.
That it definitely does not. Not for $25.
Sure. But if you do it by percentages, which is how my keeper league is, that it goes up 20% every year.
Oh. Well,
he's probably only $7 in that instance.
So that's why I'm saying it depends.
Yeah.
It depends.
Chris's super fancy math keeper league over there for the geniuses.
It's really simple.
All right, last email here. Adam from Chicago. I'm considering keeping Trey Turner over Bryce Harper. Am I crazy?
No. I'm not sure I would necessarily do it, but it's not crazy, no.
No, especially if we're attaching value to those, what you're keeping them for. But just on a... Assuming all keepers are kept equally, I wouldn't do it. But yeah, like Chris was saying, not crazy.
So Scott, tell us about your keeper article. We'll finish on this. I have some emails that I will save for our next show, and that will be part of our mailbag show. But yeah, what was the gist of your story? Which I did read, by the way. I could sum it up. I could, but I'm going to let you do it.
Yeah. So it was kind of just the task of ranking the top 50 keepers, which could be very straightforward, and to me, kind of pointless, because we already rank players, and if it's just you're keeping all players on equal footing, like you wouldn't stray from the rankings that much. You'd make some adjustments for age, I guess, but nothing too wild. So I wanted my top 50 keeper leagues to really cater to those leagues that do, that you're keeping player relative to the value you acquired them at. So I based it on last year's draft value and obviously factored in upside. There's a lot of young players on this list, in part because a lot of them were cheap last year. And it turns out Trey Turner is the number one player. Now, that kind of got a mixed reaction, I think. There's a tendency on the internet, just because there's so much content out there, every article gets kind of skimmed and very few actually are read. So if you just see a list of rankings and you see Trey Turner number one, Mike Trout number two, your initial reaction might be, this is bogus. But considering Trey Turner for a 20th round pick or whatever it would be versus Mike Trout and you're forfeiting a first round pick, yeah, I do think I would, like, if it was a trade situation and somebody was saying, I'll give you my 20th round Trey Turner for your first round Mike Trout, I would take Trey Turner. I have enough confidence in him that I'm willing to do that. It kind of surprised me, though, going through this exercise, just how many players who I'd be keeping with my first round pick were as high as they were. Because you think through, I mentioned before the talent turnover we're seeing in the majors right now, where the very best players are all still very young. And then you also consider the fact that, like, what's going to be available. It's like, if you discard a player, a keeper who would cost you your first round pick, what are you getting with that first round pick instead? And if all the other first round picks are being kept because they're so young and because people thought, what am I going to do with that pick instead? Then you risk giving up your centerpiece player for less than a legitimate first rounder. So Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Nolan Arenado, Bryce Harper, Clayton Kershaw, Manny Machado, Bryant Goldschmidt, Altuve, they're all in my top 15. But interspersed in there are value keepers like Alex Bregman, who would be kept very late, like Turner. This is an interesting one. Yu Darvish.
Oh, yeah. I did think that was pretty interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming off Tommy John surgery. He was drafted in round 12 on average last year, but I think he has top five potential and pretty confident he'll be a top 10 pitcher. So
Yoan Moncada ahead of Chris Bryant, because Moncada undrafted, Bryant third round last year, second round in Roto.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely rather have Bryant. I understand the difference in value, but there's a chance Moncada doesn't provide a return on that investment.
Yep. But I'm thinking really expensive Chris Bryant versus Yoan Moncada. I play in enough dynasty leagues to know what my behavior would be. And for the best prospect in baseball with the kind of ceiling Moncada has,
yeah,
I would make that trade.
No, so, I mean, there's a very good chance Moncada's awesome.
Yeah.
Is he a better prospect right now than Byron Buxton was 2 years ago?
I think so.
I'm not sure.
But at the same time, I would have made that trade for Byron Buxton 2 years ago. You kind of understand. Well, maybe not everybody understands, but I think real baseball people who make these kinds of trades and me in a dynasty league, it's just if you're able to lock in a superstar player for a late round cost, and that's in the way your league's salary structure works, that's something that escalates slow enough that he's going to be a bargain pick for a long time. Like that, the only way you get that is by getting in early and giving up a stud for it. That's the only way you can make that happen. And if it does work out, obviously it's a probability. There's a probability it won't. But if it does,
I mean,
that's how you form a dynasty, not by keeping all your expensive players.
I just think there's as good a chance that Chris Bryant is the best player in fantasy as there is that Yoan Moncada is a top five round pick.
Okay, let's finish with this. You're starting up a keeper league or a dynasty league this year. Let's say you're keeping at least seven players.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the draft round does matter. When does Yoan Moncada get picked? And I would guess he's going to go roughly, what, 11th or 12th round in a redraft league?
I think it's a little later than that, actually.
Okay.
Maybe more than a little later. I think he's, because the consensus opinion is that he will not be up for maybe 6 weeks, maybe 2 months. He seems to last to the late rounds.
All right.
I don't know that he should, but he seems to.
Let's say 14, 15 in a redraft league. What round are you taking Yoan Moncada in a keeper league or in a dynasty league?
Dynasty?
Probably like 8.
Wow, yeah, I was thinking a little higher than that even.
Well, 7 keepers was, to be specific,
yeah,
is the It would be the point to me where I felt like it would be the earliest point in the draft I felt like I could waste a pick here and not compromise my season. And to me, that's probably around 8, maybe round 7.
Okay. All right, guys. Mailbag coming up later in the week. I want to thank Scott, Chris, and Heath for joining me today on the podcast. Thank you all for listening. Ramping up our coverage, getting excited for fantasy baseball. We'll talk to you later in the week. See you later.